Hi, I'm Alexis.
And I'm Kim.
And this is the What You Watchin' podcast. And this week we are talking about Asteroid City, the new Wes Anderson movie. And it's not just a TikTok meme. It's an actual movie. It's not a weird AI generated thing. It's an actual real film.
This is a film. This
a true film. It's cinema.
A work of cinema.
Exactly. So we'll just jump right in. Kim, I think we both really liked this movie, but what did you think of Asteroid City?
So I have made no secret of the fact I am not the most up to date on Wes Anderson. I skip rocks kind of with him. Some I see him, some I don't. Last time I caught up, I was in a deep Adrian Brody rabbit hole, and I think this is going to continue this. But I have to say, of the ones that I've seen, you know, Darjeeling Limited, you know, Tenenbaums, by far and away my favorite. I was just smitten with this thing right from the get-go. Maybe it's the penchant for the candy-colored period pieces. I don't know. But every frame of this works. Really, like we were saying with Spider-Man last week, every frame of this is so perfectly, meticulously crafted.
Totally.
And from the humor to the visuals to that script, you can feel Wes Anderson's fingers deep down in this thing, kneading it into shape. And the humor works flawlessly. The visuals work flawlessly. This cast, which has no business being this big and this huge, gels on another level. I had no complaints at all coming out of this.
Yeah.
Flawless totally. Cinema.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's funny, you know, we were talking about Spider-Man and the visual sort of style of that and how we miss movies with sort of a visual flair to them. And I think it's like, well, if you miss movies with a visual flair, like Wes Anderson's got you. You know, like visual flair is such a huge part of how he tells a story. And this just had that, you know, all over the place. And I love the kind of, it was this, like you said, the candy colored retro thing, but also mixing that with like a sort of sci-fi element gave us this really cool, like old sci-fi feel. Everything is so meticulous, and it is really, it feels like a film that was made by a person. It feels like a person's vision, which I think is, you know, it's difficult. We don't like movies are so expensive now and so huge now, and everything is a giant corporate behemoth, that when you get something that does feel like a person made it, you know, Wes Anderson is one that can do that. Tarantino, Scorsese, like these people that can make a movie that feels like their movie. It's just such a delight when you can see stuff like that. This experience for me watching this, it was such a pleasurable watch. Like I just was enjoying so much of it. I was smiling through the whole thing. And even though it deals with things like grief or some heavier themes, it's not really like heavy in how it deals with those themes. And I felt the same. I just was like, oh, I love this. I love the visuals of this. The script is so tight. It's like, it's so stylized and uniquely Wes Anderson that like if Wes Anderson is your vibe, or if you can get into that, like you will love this movie. Especially here, I think this had, like you mentioned, the humor. I think the humor in this was great. There were some really solid, funny bits, and it comes from just a really tight screenplay and really great execution by the cast. I mean, he always has a cast that is just like stacked beyond belief with huge talent. And really, they are delivering these lines impeccably. The three little girls, like those girls cannot be more than like 7 years old. Like they are so tiny, and they are nailing those lines. And that's a good director. I mean, that's a director who can direct little kids really effectively. And I mean, those girls were incredible. And the way they interacted with Tom Hanks was great. Like I was so impressed by those three little girls. I was like, oh my God.
Well, they do so much with timing throughout this entire thing. And that's, you know, the stylization of it. This is purely Anderson's timing. This is not delivery you're going to get from actors just freewheeling it. This is so meticulously crafted down to, you know, the length of beats and the pauses. Some of these jokes, some of these moments don't work without that. I think to the moment Scarlett Johansson, I think it's Hope Davis, are talking about on the, they're talking about a film on like the outside the bathroom. And then they both look to the side and it's Bryan Cranston just standing there. And he just goes, oh, am I not supposed to be here? And then he just kind of slides off. What?
Loved that.
Brilliant moment. I loved that whole Bryan Cranston, kind of Rod Serling-ish Bryan Cranston aside, like looping through that whole strange idea. Device
of like, this is a play.
A but play it's about in thing. Early television. It was brilliant. And auteur can be such a dirty word now in film circles. And I don't understand that. And I think that's where some of the criticism Anderson gets is probably stemming from that, because this shows you the work of just delightfulness that you can get when you have a filmmaker who's able to uniquely bring together a cast and a crew to execute this, because you do not have something that comes off this smoothly without somebody nailing down every square inch of this. Totally. There is such a stylization, such an artificiality. He plays and he sees all of these elements and gets them to work together. And this, I won't lie, this is going to be one of my favorites, at least for this year thus far. There's very little that compete with how much I enjoyed this one. And
yeah,
I'm definitely going to check this out again when I can see it.
Yeah, it's one of those ones where the second the credits rolled, I was like, I really want to watch that again, because I just want to like absorb this again. Like I said, it's just such a pleasant movie watching experience that I was like, I kind of want to just do this like another time right away. And I think this will be one of those ones where, like, once it's on streaming, I'll probably watch it like 5 times, because it'll just be something where I put it on and I'm like, well, I'll watch it and I'll just see a couple minutes and I just end up watching the whole thing. Also, this movie was not super long.
No.
I think, we talk about how like movies are not necessarily telling a story as efficiently as perhaps they could have, you know, maybe done. I think we both liked Polite Society for that same reason. It was kind of a tight story that was like, here we go, like, let's move forward. There wasn't a lot of filler. This also felt like that. I think it speaks to the meticulousness. Like, it's a very like, you know, this is a finely crafted thing, and every thing that's in the frame is there for a reason. Every line of dialogue is there for a reason. Every choice is so intentional that you don't have bloat really in the story. I don't think it ever feels like it drags, even in there's scenes where there maybe are not like necessarily like essential to furthering the plot, but I don't really feel like Wes Anderson movies are necessarily about the plot. I think it's kind of like
it's about the world.
Yeah, it's like if you go to a concert and you're going to see your favorite artist, you know the song, you know the lyrics, you know the melody, but it's about watching your favorite artist perform that song live. And I think his movies are kind of like that. It's like, okay, well, it's not so much about the lyrics or the melody. It's about the live performance. It's about the execution of all of those elements together. He's a filmmaker who is constantly drawing your attention to the fact that this is fake and this is a film. And that's kind of a unique thing as well. I think we kind of get immersed in the movies need to be really real, unless they're gigantic superhero movies or something with like a $300 million budget. And he's a filmmaker who's like, no, this is all a scene. This is all, you know, even the play within a movie, within a, you know, like all that kind of framing device.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, you're meant to know that this is a performance for you, you know? And I loved that. I just really loved that.
It's so meticulous down to, I mean, he packs his frame within, you know, not everything is necessarily essential, but he makes such use of each and every moment down to, I think there's a brief shot where you see people talking in front of the bus. I was distracted because each of the stickers on the back of the bus is like a joke. Totally. Or I think it's, you know, who's the mechanic, is it Matt? That's Matt Dillon, right? Not Kevin. Matt, you know, they're talking in front of Matt Dillon's garage, and there's, you know, stickers on the wall, you know, there's advertisements on the wall that are clearly jokes.
Totally.
And I felt such love for just this world coming through. It felt like Anderson was legitimately fascinated with this environment. And it might not necessarily be about that script, even though they milked that sucker for all that it's worth. He wanted these actors as these characters in this world. And it's, if you're somebody like me, this is a magnetic as all get out setting. You know, atomic 1950s. Totally. That's why I'm looking for Oppenheimer for the same reason. This is a fascinating place to set a film. And such a strange and diverse group of characters. And he pulls out each and every person who's in his, you know, his little black book to populate this. And you can tell these are actors who have worked together constantly. Because, I mean, this is, you know, his hands are all over this, but they know how to execute.
Yeah.
And I mean, I couldn't look away from Jason Schwartzman. I thought he was great. So, you know, down to Hong Chau and basically a throwaway part. But
totally.
Beautiful casting, beautiful execution.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I loved Maya Hawke as like the sort of Sunday school teacher. And when she was kept getting interrupted by the cowboy, like I was living for that. I loved Steve Carell and how he had the machines that did all the different things, like all the different automated. I loved that. Like there was just so like, and again, it's not really about like furthering a plot necessarily. The kids that were all the sort of brainiac kids that were kind of coordinating with each other on what to do if they were in quarantine and all these different things. It was like all these little kind of vignettes where you're just so interested in the characters that you're kind of like, okay, well, I don't like a central plot is not the most important part of this because each individual scene is really just a super enjoyable thing to be absorbed in. We're always all about like, you know, an auteur's vision or a movie that feels like an experience that you haven't had a million times. And even if you've watched a bunch of Wes Anderson movies, like it does feel like a different thing.
Yes.
And it was wonderful. Tilda, wonderful as always. Like everybody, they're
living for Tilda.
So packed. It was wild. There are like, it's like every amazingly talented person you can think of is in this movie and they're all killing it. Like all of their performances are spectacular.
They're so all like, having a blast. Yeah. I mean, Scarlett Johansson, I can be very rough on her and I loved the tongue in cheek kind of ness that they pumped into that character. Same. The moment where she talks about, you know, how she's probably gonna die and things they do later. There's such a knowledge and insight into that, and she's having fun playing into that. Even Edward Norton.
Yeah.
I love Edward Norton and everything he does, but he's an actor who can be loaded down with a bit of persona, I think a bit of off-screen persona, and I love to watch him just sinking his teeth into something and having fun.
Yeah.
And he's been doing a little bit more of that lately, and I'm so glad to see it.
There's no cynicism in like a Wes Anderson movie.
Yes,
I would agree. That's what it is that I connect with so much. It's like, there's no kind of like, whatever, like no one's doing this ironically. Everyone just feels very sincere and fully committed to what they're doing. And I love that. I really enjoy that about his movies.
It's got a bit of that let's put on a show kind of wide eye. The, you know, the Mickey and Judy, the 1940s, you know. There's a bunch of people who believe in a vision. They're committed to the vision. And I mean, this plays into the whole theatrical thing. You've got the layers there, but they're all committed to that vision and it comes together beautifully.
I feel like, especially now when everything is, our choices are giant blockbusters or things on streaming. It's nice to be like, well, sometimes you can see a movie in a theater that's just like how movies used to be.
IP doesn't have to dictate everything. Yeah. And it's the pool as directors is getting so small who can do the full-on auteur thing. You have to, you know, Anderson's been doing this for 20 plus years, you know, Tarantino. These are the old men of the industry at this point. The Scorsese's, these are the men who can come in and go, no, I'm going to do my movie, the Spielbergs. I'm going to come in, I'm going to do my movie. Cameron, I paid for this building. Screw you. Get the heck out of my office.
Totally.
And with the abundance of, with the dearth of business in this industry now, the studios where they are, the amount of producers where they are, they value IP. They value the journeyman directors who can come in and follow directions, do what they're told, spit out a hazy brown looking superhero film before they move on to their next one. We need to bring back the art. And yeah. It kills me that we have to go to a certain level of either legendary director or no budget in order to be able to nourish through an image or to nourish through a vision, because this is art. This is about creativity. And it should be about the creativity and the art, not who's going to come in and see insert IP because it's taken up half of the multiplex and there's no room for anything else.
Totally. Yeah. It's like, I don't know why these things can't coexist. And I get that it's like part of it is just, well, we need 87 screenings of Doctor Strange every single day for some reason. But it's like, you know, could these things coexist? Can we have, and not just in like the indie theater in your town or like, you know, at a Landmark or an Alamo or whatever, like, can we just have where these movies, we can go see a Wes Anderson movie in the same theater that we can go see whatever new Avengers thing is, or, you know, we're going to have The Flash pretty soon. Like, maybe we could have where all of that stuff just exists and we're able to just experience film as a whole, you know?
Well, they've attempted to crossbreed the two bringing Sam Raimi into Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, James Gunn in Guardians of the Galaxy. We've had cases where auteur-ish filmmakers have existed in the IP-driven universe, but by the productions behind these are so powerful, so meticulously crafted. You know, 25 producers exercising their will, beating the life out of a film.
Yeah.
What director that values his image or their image? I want a woman to get up to that level. Yeah. What director that values their image and their vision is going to want to jump into a situation like that? Yeah. We saw what happened with Chloe Zhao in The Eternals.
It just becomes like trying to turn a cruise ship, where it's like, okay, it's too massive and it's too huge. Mm-hmm. And if you need to do a quick U-turn in a cruise ship, you're in trouble. But you can do that in a smaller ship, you know? So it's like, we just get to where we're going to start. I mean, and I'm okay with things having smaller budgets as long as things can still be executed to a pretty good level. Mm-hmm. I don't know that necessarily every one of the auteur directors could deal with, like, what if your budget was almost nothing and you had to make this movie? But maybe the next sort of generation will be people who are like micro budget filmmakers who know that they're not going to get $300 million. Yeah, exactly. They're making something that's really tiny for like streaming or whatever. And maybe in that case, we can start to see it. It's going to be a really weird, like, especially with the writer strike and everything, like the next maybe 5 years of movies and TV are going to be very bizarre.
I mean, we have the writers striking now with no intent, you know, no sign of hope yet that they're coming back. The actors are looking like they're heading that way too. And a lot of the Twitter gossip makes it sound like the directors, despite that deal, are leaning that way as well. This could be a reset that the industry desperately, desperately, desperately needs.
Yeah. I'm just scared we're going to end up with like 8 million reality shows and movies will be dead and everything will be dead and all sort of the clever, well-written things will be dead. And it'll just be like season 47 of we took 12 singles and put them in a hotel and then we got them all drunk and they all had sex with each other and now they're fighting the show.
I think I just saw Celebs on Mars. So we're dropping the kids from Modern Family in a NASA training center and making them pretend they're on Mars.
What are we doing? Please, can someone just please pay writers? Can someone please pay writers? I don't want them Celebs on Mars. Just pay the writers. I don't want this. Oh,
it's so sad.
It's so grim. It's just like, and it's like right now we get to absorb all these wonderful things that happened pre-writer strike, but like our future is so grim. And I feel bad because I feel like we do shit on comic book movies a lot, but we did like Spider-Verse, you know? Like, you can do it in a way that's creative. Yeah, exactly. We still see them because that's just sort of the standard of what movies are now.
I write for Geek Girl Authority. I have been nerdy for as long as I can remember. Captain America, the First Avenger is one of my favorite films.
Yeah.
So I give Marvel a lot of crap. Marvel, as it exists now, rubs me the wrong way. I thought what Marvel was did 2008 through
what 18 or something when was Endgame,
I guess. Yeah. And to me, Endgame, I was starting to lose it a little bit, but the crafting, the organization, the deliberate, especially that first wave before they built up to the Joss Whedon Avengers, how they laid that out and established it. To me, that was a work of genius, how they built that universe.
Yeah.
And it was about the characters. It was about the world. They created a world. And I can't think of many opportunities where we've really seen that.
Yeah. I mean, that level of like enormous storytelling has really not even been attempted before. Mm-hmm. So it is groundbreaking. And it was, I mean, those movies did well because they were good and fun, you know, and they're not doing as well now because they're not as good and not as fun. So it's like,
it's a conveyor belt now.
Yeah, exactly. Like it was successful for a reason. And the reason was because they were great movies. They were really enjoyable. They did feel like they had a mixture of like, yes, it's a giant corporate machine, but you can still tell a story and do something that's like artistic within that, particularly the Guardians movies. But it's like, you know, I mean, they could go back to that. I think it's just they're at a point now where the money is dictating so much that the art is much more secondary than it was before. But, you know, they could go back. They could right the ship if they wanted to.
And something like Asteroid City, segueing it, bring it full circle, shows us what you can do when you prioritize that world. And
yeah.
There are moments there with the backdrops where I could not tell if that was a backdrop or if that was CG. He didn't have that, you know, the bland haze over the top of it.
Totally.
But it's just such a truly brilliant, I keep saying it, truly brilliant, truly beautiful execution. And that's what Marvel was starting to do. It shows you what cinema allows you to do and what you can create if you truly value it as an art form.
Totally.
And we've been losing, I think it came back briefly in maybe the 90s or something, but it's ever since the 70s, it's been moving so much towards a business.
Yeah.
And yes, there's so much money sunk into this, but we shouldn't have to go down to the baby, you know, the straight to VHS, to use a dated term, films to get execution and to get a vision like this. We should be allowed to the mid-range adult film. This is a mid-budget adult movie, and I like them, and I miss having more of them.
Same. Absolutely the same. Yeah. I completely agree. This movie made me want a million more movies like this to exist. So I hope that we can get those at some point.
I added what Moonrise Kingdom to my watch list. I want to finish I want to coast through the rest of the Andersons.
Yes. All of his movies are just so visually interesting too, that like, you know, you really get absorbed in the world just because of the really cool visuals. And I know the visuals now, people, it's like, you know, it's the TikTok trend, it's the whatever, but it's like that style is so distinct because it's good and memorable.
It's good. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, yeah, well, good. I mean, we all like, you know, we all know kind of like what a Scorsese gangster picture looks like. We all know what like a Wes Anderson movie looks like. You know, we all kind of know these things, and it's because like there is a standard for that, and the standard is really good, and that's why we know those things.
And can we take a moment? Is it a spoiler? The alien, the little alien.
I mean, I don't know what's considered a spoiler, because the sort of story of this is not that important. There's an alien in it, and the alien is great.
Comes down on the little thing, and then just he just slides over to do what he's gonna do.
So good.
Silence. Simple. Hysterical. The expression.
Oh, so good. So good. I mean, there's so much to love about this movie, and it is something where the repeat watches, I'm sure, will be just as enjoyable as the first watch. And that's where I'm like, good. I can't wait for that. I want to see this again. And it's under 2 hours, so I really want to see it again.
There are so many moments to this that stick with me. I don't know if I can, Ness, I'm still dreading writing my review and trying to put this into synopsis form.
Same.
But there are so many shots, so many scenes, so many visual moments that, you know, I still think about today that are still sticking with me, what, almost a week after we've seen this film.
Totally.
It's candy. It's candy colored. It's a visual feast.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we both really loved it.
Two thumbs way up.
Go see it, everyone, so we can have more movies like this. The only way we'll get more is if we actually see these movies. So please see them. I think so. Our next one, we will talk about The Flash.
And then after that,
I think we'll have Indiana Jones. And yeah, we're just making it through. Now it's blockbuster time, huge, gigantic movies. Indiana Jones, I'm so nervous for, because I'm terrified. Want this to be good so bad, but I'm also terrified that it's going to be terrible.
I grew up on Last Crusade. That was the formative indie movie for me, but Temple of Doom has always been my favorite. Nice. So I'm the weirdo, but I know Temple of Doom gets a lot of hate now. And I see constant hatred about it. But I suppose, can it get any worse after Crystal Skull?
I was going to say, Crystal Skull is my favorite, I'd be like, okay, we need to have a talk.
You got your film degree where?
You know, there's someone that Crystal Skull is their favorite movie, and I would love to talk to that person, because I just would like to know why.
Explain it. No judgment. Let us know. If it's you, let us know. Explain it. We want to know.
Well, I feel like, you know, we've covered this wonderful movie that we hope that everyone will watch, and please go out and watch it, because we really want more movies like this. Yeah. And
give Wes Anderson your hard-earned money.
Exactly. Like, please support this movie and make more movies like this happen through your support, through the generous support of viewers.
Yes.
But yeah, thank you so much for watching. And I will link our reviews to this in the description. You can follow us on all of the socials. Our handles will be in the description as well. Like, comment, share, subscribe. Tell other people about it, all this stuff. And thank you so much for watching.